It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
Joining us now is Lieutenant General Keith Kellogg, retired, who's a Fox News contributor now, former National Security Advisor to Vice President Pence, and the former Chief of Staff of the National Security Council in the Trump administration, author of the book War by Other Means. General, good to have you back.
Guy, thanks for having me. Good to be with you today.
I want to ask you about what just happened earlier this week at the United Nations. The Biden administration decided not to use its veto power on a resolution that Israel strongly opposed. This was a weak, flawed ceasefire declaration at the UN Security Council. U.S. could have blocked it. I think under the Trump administration would have blocked it. But Team Biden decided to abstain from the vote, which allowed it to pass, while also sort of mealy-mouthed, pretending that they were technically against the resolution, even though they didn't block it. I know Israel is very upset about that. A planned delegation was shut down, one that Biden had requested. The Israeli government says that resolution actually damaged talks over a ceasefire more broadly. It actually undermined the process. During your time at the NSC under Trump, how do you think some of this might have played out differently?
Well, it would have been dramatically different. Look, I think the relations now that we have, the United States, has between us and Israel is the lowest I've ever seen it. And it's partially because of what we have done or what we have not to do. And you mentioned that recent vote in the UN where we actually abstained, so it was a 14-0 vote on the ceasefire and about Hamas. It sends a terrible, terrible message. But look, I'll tell you something, Guy. When you look at what this administration has done, because it would have never happened in the Trump administration, I guarantee you that. But look, you pair that with what happened just yesterday when you had their Minister of Defense, Gallant, come in and talk to Lloyd Austin, our Secretary of Defense, and he actually got lectured. I watched it on TV, and I thought, Lloyd, what are you doing? And we would never treat an ally like that. You know, I'd like to remind everybody, Guy, the bad guys in this are Hamas.
Yeah.
On 7th of October, they crossed from out of Gaza into Israel proper. They murdered, they slaughtered, they raped, they took hostages, to include Americans. And then the Israelis understandably went in and have gone into a campaign on reducing Hamas inside Gaza. And they haven't finished the job. They are going to go into Rafah. They have to. That's where the last remaining Nakba battalions, the assault battalions of Hamas, are. That is probably where the hostages are. That's where the remaining leadership of Hamas is. They've got no option but to go in there. And for us to call for a ceasefire, which just allows Hamas to refit and rearm, is something any military officer would tell you. That's just dumber than dirt, and they shouldn't go there. So this is of our own making. What I mean by ours, the United States, we equivocate. We haven't supported the Israelis, and we just, to me, there's a moral imperative to this. This is one of those where you stand up to an with your ally, and you say, we are with you 100%. But now, because of the mixed messages, Hamas is using this as a propaganda game, and people are going, where does the United States really stand on this? It's almost like we're sitting in the middle of the room holding hands and singing Kumbaya. It's not going to work.
Yeah, they feel empowered. They've got new leverage, thanks to America. I mean, the UN, maybe you expect it, but not the United States. I think it's really painful to watch. And I'm glad that you mentioned it. I know that we occasionally do as well here, but it should happen basically every day. Some Americans might say, okay, well, you know, this is Israel's problem. And even if they're sort of rooting for Israel, why are Americans so fixated on this? Well, I think there's a lot of different answers to that. I think Israel's fate is very important to us. I think people who hate Israel also hate us. Israel does a lot of our dirty work, for lack of a better term, in the Middle East, invaluable in terms of a partnership on intelligence. That list goes on. But clear that all away. There were Americans murdered on October 7th by Hamas. They killed a bunch of our people during that massacre. And there are still American hostages being held in Gaza, if they're still alive. We know of 5 Americans still being held. That is an America issue in addition to an Israel issue. I think you're exactly right to frame it up the way that you did. I do have to ask you, though, General, about something that your former boss, the former president, Donald Trump, just recently said in an interview. And overall, I agreed with many of the points that he made in this interview. But he was asked about October 7th. He was asked about the rise of anti-Semitic attacks within the United States. And he sort of started to answer the question that he veered off into criticizing the Israelis. Cut 14.
Since October 7, we saw a major rise of anti-Semitic attacks in America. What are you going to do about it?
Well, that's because you fought back. And when you fought back, and I think Israel made a very big mistake, and I see it, and I saw it every night, and I wanted to call them and say, don't do it. It would say the Israeli Defense Ministry or a tag would be on these photos and shots, I mean, moving shots of bombs being dropped into buildings in Gaza. And I said, ooh, that's a terrible portrait. It's a it's a very bad picture for the world. The world is seeing this.
So the interview comes back and the interviewer says, well, there were terrorists in those buildings. Kind of, what are you talking about? Cut 15.
Yeah, but Hamas terrorists are in those buildings, so how can we fight them?
You go and do what you have to do, but you don't do that. And I think that's one of the reasons that there's been a lot of kickback. If people didn't see that, they didn't have to see that. Every single night I'd watch, and every single one of those. And I think Israel wanted to show that it's, you know, tough, but sometimes you shouldn't be doing that.
Okay, General. So, I mean, he's saying that the Israelis made a very big mistake by showing their side of the war, it sounds like. And he said people saw it every night, and Israel was branding some of these videos and images with IDF graphics. He said it paints a terrible portrait for the world as people are watching. He said, quote, you go and you do what you have to do, speaking about Israel and Gaza. I agree with that. He said, but you don't do that. I'm just trying to figure out what he's saying here, what the critique is, and what he would expect Israel to do differently. I'm sort of just deeply confused and a little bit disturbed by those answers.
Yeah, you know, the comment he made, which you do what you have to do, is probably the operative comment out there, which means you're going to have to go out and clear out Hamas and kill the leadership and basically reduce the battalions that you've got there. You know, I go back to tell people, because a lot of people, honestly, Guy, don't have a good feel for it. I've said this repeatedly on different shows where I'd say, look, if you're a soldier, where you never want to have to fight is you never want to have to fight in cities, because city fighting is the most difficult kind of fight you can ever be in, because the bad guys get intermingled with civilians. They use the crushed buildings, the fallen buildings as cover, and you have to go street by street, door by door, floor by floor to get it done. It's a terrible, terrible fight, but you've got to do it. And it's hard to basically imagine that if you've never actually had to do it. And I've had to do it. And it's really tough. And how you do it, you actually have to use overwhelming firepower to do it. Here's what's a little bit interesting, and they've tried to do this, and that's one of the reasons why Gallant was back here talking to Austin, is you need to use precision munitions. And Gallant is here trying to get more precision munitions. Where you get into trouble when these buildings keep coming down is when you use dumb bombs, meaning bombs that are not precision guided. But precision guidance or weapons are not that plentiful. We're going to have to resupply them to do it. And then if you have strategically shown targets taken out by precision weapons, it sends a bit different picture. And that's where I'd sit down, I'd talk with the president and say, you know, Mr. President, here's why they're doing it. Because he has actually said, you know, you do what you're going to have to do. And I think that's long term it's going to happen. He understands the civilian damage. It is very hard. It's tough to see. It's tough to watch. But, you know, I think I remember saying on the 8th or 9th of October that everybody better steel themselves, because when you start in city fighting, it is brutal and you're going to have collateral damage and you'd better accept it.
Yeah, especially when the enemy is actually invested in collateral damage. They want innocent people to be killed because it's part of their strategy, which is why they embed with civilians. That's what Hamas does. It's not Israel's fault that Hamas is extra evil that way, but it is Israel's responsibility to make sure Hamas can never do again what happened on October 7th. If the last stronghold is Rafah, I just find it really awful that the United States government and the Biden administration would be telling them pretty explicitly, don't do it. Don't finish the job. Don't finish them off. That is like a survival rallying cry for Hamas. It's the last thing the United States should be saying.
You know, you're absolutely right. You know, and by the way, when I was with Golan, I was when I was over in Israel a few weeks ago, I sat down and talked to them. They are doing everything possible to limit civilian damage. They really are. But it's when you, and you're absolutely correct, when you get intermingled, it's so easy to say, but it's so, so very, very hard to do. They are going to go into Rafah. Bibi Netanyahu is going to make sure that happens because they're going to have to eradicate, eliminate the Hamas leadership. But we ought to be behind them 100%. And we're sending a very, very mixed message when we talk, when we veto, not veto, when we abstain from a vote in the UN or when we criticize publicly their minister of defense. Look, Ron Dermer, their minister of strategy, very close to Bibi Netanyahu, was supposed to come over here. And because of that vote in the UN, he's not coming. This is the guy who is our, was their ambassador to the U.S., really understands Netanyahu, really understands the United States, really understands what's going on.
I met with him when I was in Israel 2 weeks ago. I chatted with Dermer off the record for a while. Very smart guy, very good communicator, super, super savvy, and holding him back from a meeting that Biden requested, by the way. Like, Biden keeps summoning people and demanding things, and Israel can only take so much of that. I know we're the superpower, but they've got a job to do. And the last point on Israel that I want to ask you about, when I was over there, we went up to the northern border, Lebanon, the Hezbollah threat. There are 80,000 Israelis roughly out of their homes indefinitely because the buffer zone has been violated by Hezbollah up there, Iran proxy. There's a UN resolution that the terrorists have violated, and that's why right now it's deemed not safe for tens of thousands of Israelis to live in their homes up north. And I felt like the Israelis were preparing us for the possibility of Israel opening up a northern front in this war just to push the buffer zone back into Lebanon and basically enforce the UN resolution that should be in place so the buffer zone isn't inside Israel, so all those people can return to their homes. I just wonder if that is something that Israel feels like they must do, and they already have criticism from the United States down south in Rafah and Gaza. Does that then potentially complicate what they feel like a necessity would be on the northern side of their country?
Yeah, you know, here's what's interesting with the Hezbollah, you know, into the north, is when we were there, we talked to the defense minister of strategy that they've actually had inside their, what I call their defense department, and it was an interesting talk, and he brought something up that really struck me. He said that, you know, Hezbollah now, with Secretary General Nasrallah leading it, is actually part of the Lebanese government. They hold 13 of the 128 seats in the Lebanese parliament. They're invested in making sure that the government stays a government. And right now, it's sort of like two dogs circling each other. They don't know really how much they're going to fight at all. And there is conflict going on. And I think the Israelis are going to be able to move those forces back in, because I don't think that Nasrallah wants to have Hezbollah get involved in this fight right now. They're kind of saying, you know, most of the Hezbollah families live south of the Litani River. So they're kind of saying, well, okay, maybe there's a way we can work this out. They're not going to be friends. You know, they're clearly not Jeffersonian Democrats to the north. But I think over time that can lessen, and once this Hamas issue is solved, because Hezbollah has basically said to the world and to us and to the Israelis, good luck in the south, Hamas, but we're not coming in to join
you. Yeah, so maybe it could be diplomatically resolved. I think that would be everyone's hope up north. All right, General Kellogg, stand by. When we come back from this short break, I want to jump to Russia and to China as well. That's coming up on The Guy Benson Show.
Not the same talking points here. The Guy Benson Show.
It's The Guy Benson Show. Retired Lieutenant General Keith Kellogg, a Fox News contributor, is with us. General, I want to ask you about two other countries briefly in the time that we have left together. Number one, Russia, the awful, bloody, terrifying attack at that concert by ISIS in Moscow. And ISIS took credit for it, took responsibility for it. We know that a lot of people were killed, many others wounded. Putin and the Kremlin trying to at least on some level pin this on Ukraine, which seems like such clumsy, stupid propaganda, but that's what they're trying to do. I just wonder what your analysis is of the ISIS threat and then the blame casting after the fact by Putin and company.
Yeah, I think that they've got a threat. I mean, but they've had a continual threat inside Russia with terrorist organizations. This is not the first time it's ever happened. And it's coming out that they actually did this training in Turkey. and they actually, you know, went forward to conduct the attack. This is one of those where it's a terrorist attack internal to Russia. It has nothing to do with the Ukrainians. You're absolutely right on the messaging, which is really clumsy. I think you could figure a better way to do it. And, you know, when you're doing something like that, if you're on the Ukrainian side, you're saying, why would you inflame a population like Russia on a terrorist attack? It makes no sense at all. It wasn't even a military target. And I just think this is one of those where it was a terrorist attack. We've had them here in this country. Hopefully there's not going to be some in the future, but the potential is always there. And I think they're just they've handled it pretty, what I would call, ruthlessly and efficiently. But I would separate the two. It has nothing to do with – I mean, maybe it sounds good, but I don't think that's getting any play globally or getting any traction at all that Russia's blaming Ukraine. This is one of those – there's
no
a fight going
that.
On, but not it doesn't it did involve this one.
Yeah. And finally, China. I saw a report just a few days ago of an unprecedented number of incursions into Taiwanese airspace – by the CCP military. And when I see that, I sort of ping the old antenna of concern, like, okay, I think it was a couple dozen in the span of 24 hours. Is that just a flex and some bellicosity from the Chinese, or is that something more of a darker omen?
You know, Guy, I will tell you, this, every time I see this, it reminds me of what we did in Panama years ago before the Panama invasion. And we had a series of exercises called sand flea exercises. And I had my assault battalion down on the ground inside Panama. We deployed from the States into there. And it was a constant rehearsal of our assault positions. And we did it till eventually the Panamanians said, oh, here they come again. And then one night we went hard and we actually did the invasion. My concern is always when you see things like this, think very hard. What are they doing? What are they trying to do? Are they setting conditions so much so that you're eventually going to say, ah, they're not going to do anything? And all of a sudden, they go for it. And
like
you're not
lulling people into a false sense
Absolutely.
Of security. Oh, it's just another exercise. We've seen this a million times. Then all of a sudden, it's live. It's the real show. And all those rehearsals suddenly have led to this moment. That is something I hadn't thought of, but that's why we have you on the show. Lieutenant General Keith Kellogg, retired, now a Fox News contributor. He was the chief of staff at the NSC under President Trump. General, always appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Guy. Thanks for having me.
And the final hour of the Guy Benson Show is up next. Jim Gray, legendary sportscaster, is here on the Ohtani controversy, which just got even more interesting. We'll ask him about that when we return.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network, subscribe and listen to the Trey Gowdy Podcast. Former federal prosecutor and four-term U.S. congressman from South Carolina brings you a one-of-a-kind podcast. Subscribe and listen now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.